Which, oh, by the way, lots of stuff going on over there. Back tonight, the Rebirth Brass Band from New Orleans, 7 o'clock tonight. All ages, tickets still available at the Rev Room this evening. On the Revolution Hotline, first time he's been in the zone with us, from BleacherReport.com, Joe Giglio, talking a little Major League Baseball. Joe, appreciate the time. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Very good. Joined by Phil Elson, who is the voice of the Arkansas Travelers, and like yourself, he's a Pennsylvania native. So.
That's right. I'm from Pittsburgh. Joe, Center Valley, huh?
Yeah, went to college there, DeSales University, a great little town, and happy to be on with you guys talking about it. I haven't heard anyone mention Center Valley in any of the interviews I've done lately.
Phil is the only person that's from Pennsylvania that comes on the show, so we try to give it a little love when we can.
That's right. That's right. That will kind of lead into my first question for you, Joe. The big surprise this year in baseball have been my hometown Pittsburgh Pirates, a team that the last 2 years has had great first halves, has been well-documented, but has been kind of the dog of the second half both years, and it was a record-setting fall from grace last season. What would give anybody that's a Pirates fan any thoughts that that's not going to happen in the second half? Because when I look at it, I'm looking at a team that's got great starting pitching and great fielding right now, and for me, those are two reasons why I wouldn't expect them to fall as much as they have the last 2 years.
I would agree with you, and I think you have to throw in the back end of the bullpen there, too, with Mark Melanson, who I think is probably one of the all-star snubs, that, you know, talking about the all-star game and who should have went, who didn't. I mean, he has been great in the eighth inning, and of course Jason Grilley in the ninth, who is an all-star and very deserving. But those two have been as close to perfect as you can get in the eighth and the ninth. So not only the great starting pitching you mentioned, which is also very deep considering they've had so many injuries and now they're getting some of those guys back, like an A.J. Burnett, but when they get the ball past the seventh inning, it's almost game over. You throw in the fielding, you throw in Andrew McCutchen, the power of Pedro Alvarez, and there's a lot of reasons to believe Pirates are not only going to get over 500, but compete for a playoff spot well into September.
Now, you know that the last couple of years, they've really, I mean, they tried to remake the team a couple of years ago. A lot of them made some smaller trades last year. I'm not sure if there's stuff that they can do to make that team any better right now, but if they were to trade somebody, they've got a lot more starting pitching, I think, than they've had before. That could be the area where they would look to get rid of. What would they need in return, do you think?
I think they would need a big bat. If they were going to go out and make a trade, I don't think it makes sense for them to just get an incremental upgrade somewhere around the outfield, or one of the corners, maybe right field. If you're going to go out and the Pirates are going to make a deal, you know, a few years ago they were in a spot like this. They weren't playing nearly as well, but they were in a spot where they wanted to add. They went on to Derek Lee, who was an older player, gave them a couple good months, clearly wasn't enough. They also added a Ryan Ludwig in that same period there, and I don't think those are the kind of players they're going to go after this time. If they do make a deal, it would have to be a perfect storm of a player that obviously is not too expensive, not going to be a free agent in the next year or two, because it wouldn't make sense for them to give up young players for that. But maybe someone under contract who is a good young player and they can add to the mix. If they can make a deal like that, if you look at a team in the Pirates, that would be close to complete as any time in 20 years.
Joe, and you look at that Central Division in the National League, and it's the most exciting race right now. Of course, the West Division's coming together a little bit, but you got the Cardinals a game and a half up on the Pirates. The Reds have slid down a little bit, but they're still looking pretty good. What's the team right there that needs the most? Because St. Louis looks like a pretty complete ball club right now. We just talked about the Pirates. What do you think about Cincinnati?
I think Cincinnati's very good. I think they need to get themselves healthy, especially their starting pitching with Johnny Cueto. They have Homer Bailey, who we've seen in the news recently with a second consecutive no-hitter, I guess you could say. The second, he's the last guy to throw the two no-hitters in baseball this September, and then last week. So they have Bailey, they have Flatos. If they can get Johnny Cueto healthy, I think the Reds are going to be in really good shape. And it looks like we have a three-team race here in the NL Central, which is going to be a lot of fun as we move down the stretch of the season, because not only will they be fighting for that division, they'll also be fighting for the top two wildcard spots. And you could probably make a case right now, looking at the teams in the NL East, the NL West, that the NL Central could field three playoff teams.
And it looks like the Cubs are ready to unload. I mean, they already got rid of Marmol. Kevin Gregg may be on. I saw one of your columns on Bleacher Report mentioning Kevin Gregg as someone who might be ticketed for greener pastures. Perhaps Garza, of course, is someone that's on the trading block. How active do you think the Cubs will be?
I think they'll be very active. I think they're going to be one of the teams that makes a big difference in who wins the pennant this year, because they're going to move someone that's going to have an impact. They already moved Scott Feldman, like you mentioned. Garza Although there was a report a couple days ago that they were kind of talking extension with him instead of trading him away, I think that was more leverage in a trade where they're saying, look, if we don't get what we want for this guy, we'll keep him because he's good. He's not an older guy, and you can envision Matt Garza being a top-of-the-rotation pitcher for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Health, of course, being assumed, and with him it's never kind of assumed. So I think Garza will be moved. I think Greg will be moved. And Alfonso Soriano, once again, is hot, and he's the kind of guy who's a streaky hitter that if he gets on a team that needs some offense and they can work out the details of his contract next year, paying some of it, he would help a lot of teams, specifically the Texas Rangers, who probably will lose Nelson Cruz here within the next couple of weeks with the Biogenesis suspensions, and we'll see how the appeals go. But I could see Soriano on the move as well for the Cubs.
Joe Giglio joining us, BleacherReport.com's Major League Baseball national lead writer. Let me ask you about a couple guys with Arkansas ties and another Cub in the mix as well. Travis Wood's a name we've heard mentioned as a guy that could potentially be moved. I'm hoping they'll lock him down, being a Cub fan and being a guy who likes to root for my Arkansas ties. And then Cliff Lee pitched last night and gave up, I think, back-to-back homers on two different occasions and only given up 4 runs over 7 innings. But he's a name that's always brought up when there's talk of trades. And, of course, he's got a lot of out clauses as far as where he can and can't be sent. What do you expect to happen with those two guys?
I think Travis Wood will stay. I think the Cubs like him, and he's a guy that has been there for a couple years. It just seems to be getting better. And you look at the trade they made for him a couple years ago, giving up Sean Marshall, a guy who's now injured in the Cincinnati Reds pen. It was a great move by the Cubs front office to get a guy in Wood who always showed potential, but now he's morphed into one of the more durable and really underrated starters in baseball, made the All-Star team, and it seems like he gives quality start after quality start. And then Cliff Lee, he's the game-changer when it comes to the entire trade period here, because if Cliff Lee does get moved from Philadelphia, he's shown before that he has no problem being a mercenary, fitting in right away and really dominating for whatever team he goes to. Reminds me a little bit about 20 years ago, David Cone seemed to do this year in, year out. He would go from the Mets to the Royals to the Blue Jays to the Yankees, and wherever he went, he put the team on his back the last couple months of the season and excelled. If Cliff Lee is moved, it changes everything, and whatever team gets him, you would have to vault right to the top of the American League or National League, you know, hierarchy when it comes to trying to get to a World Series.
What about, just looking at the races here, I mean, you've got a great battle going on, as usual, not surprising, in the AL East. With Boston on top, you've got four teams very much in the mix, with the Yankees on the bottom of those four, 49 and 42. What do you see happening there, and do one of those teams try to make a move, maybe?
I think all of them will make, you know, various moves in terms of maybe big, maybe small, but I think they'll all try to add, because the playoff race, the American League East, although it's always strong, like you mentioned, it is abundantly strong this year. I mean, the Blue Jays, who are in last place and started off the season so poorly, are only 4 games back of the loss column for the second wild card. So you even look at the last place team in the East, and they have to think they're in it and could be buyers here as we move across July. I mean, the Red Sox have played the best from pillar to post in the AL East, but everyone else has kind of jockeyed for position behind them, and the Rays pitching is hot right now. The Yankees get Jeter back this afternoon, and the Orioles may have the best offense in all of baseball. So I think we're in for a race for the ages where we could go into September and I could see a scenario where all 5 teams have a realistic shot at a postseason spot.
On the other end of the spectrum, of course, the Astros, they sucked in the National League. They moved to the American League, and they're sucking equally well there. Is there another place we can move them? Is there a small college conference
we can try to put them in? This is where relegation could come into minor league and major league baseball.
I mean, I don't even know that they could win the Texas League this year, Phil.
They probably couldn't, but I think it'd be fun to watch them there. It's interesting watching the Astros because this is by design. I mean, the Astros and their front office have chosen to stink here over the next few years. They are embracing this and, you know, taking the benefits, which now in the new collective bargaining agreement allow them more money to go out and get international players, allow them more money in the draft to sign their draft picks. And they believe that at some point here this is going to pay off and it gives them an inherent advantage. They think it's much more of a benefit to lose 105 games rather than lose 95. So we'll see how it works out. But over the course of the rest of the season, you look at the end of the schedule, and whatever team is facing the Astros the last 2 weeks, whether it be Oakland or Texas, you probably give them a little bit of an edge for the AL West or a wild card spot, because you just know those teams, when push comes to shove, they're not going to lose to the Astros if the playoff spot's on the line.
So you think the Astros are less of a dumpster fire than Miami, or more?
That's a good question. I think they have better direction. I mean, they're both pretty equal dumpster fires, and Miami actually has a pretty decent system, according to a lot of people who follow the minor leagues closely, so you could see some good young players emerging in Miami, but eventually they'll trade them away and mess it up anyway.
I think in both sides they've lost a lot of fans through public relations. The Astros still are not on television in every household market in the Houston area. Miami's been a PR disaster really from the start, ever since Loria got involved. I don't know. I know you're a stats guy, Joe, and I love statistics too. I don't know how much you would place into winning percentage in the minor leagues, but the Astros have the second best winning percentage of all of the minor league organizations, and we've seen some pretty good players coming through Corpus Christi, which is their AA affiliate in the Texas League. They've got the best record in this league, so I think that there's for Astros fans, there are good things coming. I mean, they get the top pick this year in Mark Appel. He looks like a keeper. I'm sure they're going to try to get him up, not this year, but sometime in the next 2 years. But it looks like things might be looking up for Houston, and we don't see the Marlins prospects, but it just never sounds good what's going on in Miami when Loria is involved.
No, it does, and you can't trust them either. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton's 23 years old, the best power hitter maybe in all of baseball, and you would think with their minor league system and what I've heard about it that a good core could emerge around Stanton, but you don't trust them to not trade him in the next couple of years. So when we're looking at the two dumpster fires, I'm with you. I think you look at the numbers in the Astro minor league system, they are winning games, and from their GM on Twitter, who's always tweeting about their success, I mean, they're proud of that, and they think it's going to translate into something meaningful in the next 2 years with the big league team. So if you're looking for one of the two teams to trust moving forward, I think you have to trust the Astros over the Marlins, just because one team, just at this point, can never be trusted.
Also, like their hire is Reed Ryan as team president, someone I've gotten to know in the Texas League. He ran the Round Rock Express and the Corpus Christi Hooks. Great baseball guy, regardless of the last name and the relation to Nolan Ryan. He's a great baseball guy, and I think it was a good hire. I want to ask you about the biggest name who's returning to action today, and I guess it took a little bit longer than expected. But Derek Jeter is going to be back in the Yankee lineup today. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing for the Yanks, but he's got to be better than the combination of Jason Nix and Eduardo Nunez. I've been floored at how the Yankees have been able to survive and stay in contention with all the injuries that they've been dealing with and ineffectiveness from other players that usually are doing well. But what does Jeter bring back to the Yankees, aside from the fact that, you know, he's the cornerstone of the franchise for all these years and the greatest Yankee, according to their fans in the last 30 or 40 years? What else can he bring at this age, at that position?
He could bring some offense. I know the jury is out on how much he could play shortstop and how well he could play. And if we're being honest, here, the last few years, his range has deteriorated year after year. He's not close to the shortstop he was 10 years ago, and that's to be expected. I mean, he's an old man trying to play one of the most demanding positions in baseball. So defensively, I and the Yankees are going to have to, for lack of a better term, hide him out there. DH him like he is today. Eduardo Nunez to play some shortstop and pick their spots with Jeter in the field, not only to keep him healthy, but to prevent some runs from going through there in the middle of the infield. But offensively, if he's healthy, he provides a major upgrade, like you were saying, over Nix and all of the cast of characters, including Reed Brignac. They've run out there over the course of this season. So is he going to be the Jeter of even last year, where his OPS was almost 800? Probably not, but the Yankees' collective shortstop group this season has been abysmal in terms of numbers offensively. So if he's just even a shell of his former self, that's a marginal upgrade. And for the Yankees, like you said, staying in it, just a little more offense with their starting pitching and their bullpen, that might be enough to keep him in it. So the Jeter return is a big one, although expecting him to be the Jeter of old isn't fair.
Joe Giglio, BleacherReport.com, joining us, the Major League Baseball National Lead Writer, and we can tell why. Let me ask you about Torii Hunter, another guy who's in the twilight of an illustrious career. I was blown away when I saw, I guess I didn't realize, that he is only making his fifth All-Star appearance, and he's got, I think, maybe twice that many gold gloves at least. But what are your thoughts on him, and are you surprised at all at how much he's been an offensive addition in Detroit this year?
He's been excellent. I have been a little bit surprised because last year you looked at him and it seemed like he had a magical story season there in Los Angeles where you said that was his swan song. There's no way you're going to be able to put up numbers again. And he's doing it. And he's an all-star. He had an amazing April. He cooled off a little bit after that. But clearly he's deserving of going to the all-star game for Detroit. And he's kind of been the perfect antidote for them in the outfield because they had so many different right fielders last year, from Brennan Bosch and, you know, a slew of cast of characters that really couldn't hit. And now they throw Hunter out there. He's consistent. He's durable. Still plays decent defense in the corner after all those years of being just an elite center fielder defensively for the Twins. And I think he fits in perfectly. And you look at what the Tigers are doing, and it's kind of surprising that they struggle a little bit, and they're keeping the Indians and the Royals close enough in the standings for those teams to believe they're in it. But at some point this summer, especially if Verlander starts to look more like himself, you figure the Tigers are going to take off like they did last year, win the division, and you get to October, he's another tough out in their lineup ahead of Cabrera and Fielder.
There are seeming to be two schools of thought on Yasiel Puig, who's been really the great story for Major League Baseball from a standpoint of, for the average fan, the very, very casual fan, it's got people paying attention. Got some negative feedback I was telling Phil about earlier. Apparently was not very respectful of a Diamondbacks legend, caught some heat from their current catcher about it, and is trying to be sort of trained up. He's not real friendly with the media. What are your thoughts on him in general, and I guess you know, his performance so far this year? And also today we're going to find out whether or not he makes the All-Star team.
Yeah, in terms of performance, he has been as good as gets. I mean, you're watching a player here that's impacting the game every night in all the different ways. We hear about five-tool players all the time, but rarely do you see all those tools in the, you know, in the course of a week or 10 days, and he shows them. I mean, just his first game, hitting the ball and then throwing the runner out of first base from the wall in right field. He has it all, and he's helped transform the Dodgers into maybe baseball's biggest disappointment the first 2 months. And now you look up at the NL West standings, they pretty much caught the Diamondbacks after beating them up this week. And, you know, moving forward, how do you not pick the Dodgers to win the NL West and be the best team in that division? And I've heard the same things. He's got a little bit of an attitude. He plays with a chip on his shoulder. But you know what? I kind of like it. I think it's given the Dodgers a little bit of an identity. He was involved in that brawl with the Diamondbacks, and feels like since then the Dodgers have been a different team. So, of course, you want him to respect the game. He probably does have some things to learn about who these players are, how to treat other teams' coaches. But as far as the way he plays on the field, including last night where, you know, he ran through a stop sign at third base, tried to score a run, was out by a mile, and still not plowed over Miguel Montero, the catcher of the Diamondbacks, but he gave him a little shove and then looked back. Mm-hmm. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, plays with an edge, and I kind of like it. He's really fun for the game of baseball.
If you were deciding who was going to get that last spot, would you put him on the All-Star team?
I would. I think the other NL candidates that deserve it almost as much, Desmond with the Diamondbacks, Nationals, probably one of the most underrated shortstops in baseball, and then Freddie Freeman has had a nice year, but in terms of the All-Star game, it's supposed to be about excitement, and right now, if you want to take the route of the game matters and the National League trying to win home field, who would you rather have to win one game? I feel like Puig gives you more of a chance, mm-hmm. and he does more things to help you win than any of the other players on the ballot.
Yeah, I want to see that. I want to see Puig pinch hitting in the ninth inning with the game on the line. He's really been exciting to watch. I'll say this, though, and I've seen some writers and analysts who kind of want to wait for him to go through the league for a second time and for another couple months before they truly buy in. And I'm kind of on that wing because I want to see if he's able to make those necessary adjustments that he will have to make because I think that the athleticism only goes so far. And he's got, just like any good Major League Baseball player, you have that physical nature and the ability to do all these great things on the field, but sometimes You struggle to make that adjustment that when a hole in your swing is found, when what you are susceptible is found. I really want to see if he's able to make that adjustment. I don't know if he can or not.
I don't either, and that's going to be the fun part about the second half. And I agree with you, and he's going to have to make those adjustments. You look at the numbers are outrageous so far, and no one will be able to sustain the numbers he's put up. But the one part of his game he probably will have to improve is his plate discipline. The guy doesn't like to walk much. He strikes out this week more than he has been. So you could tell maybe pitchers are finding a little bit of a hole in that swing and they're trying to exploit it. He's still impacting the game in many ways, so he's going to be a very valuable player even if he goes through a slump or two. But the fun part will be if he does figure it out and he does kind of iron out those wrinkles in his game, how high can this kid go, especially that he's only 22 years old and he's already doing this? The sky's the limit.
Joe, great stuff. Appreciate the time very much, and we'll all be watching the All-Star game. We'll round up with you again here in a few weeks, maybe.
Sounds great, guys. Thanks
all right,
a lot.
Joe, take care. So, Gilio.
I was going to ask Joe if there's anything else that he pays attention to, because he seems to know everything going on.
Yes. Well, it was nice being – I was the meat in a baseball savant sandwich. It was
He's
really
good.
Nice.
He's
it was
really
fun
good.
Between you two.
That was fun.
That was enjoyable.
Thanks, Justin.
Hey. Trying to feed the habit, my friend. And, you know, luckily you're not a drug addict because I would feed your habit there too, and that would be no good for anyone.